Started. So thank you for joining. You are in the session to become an office ninja. If you don't want to become an office ninja, don't be in this session. I'm kidding. You'll see a lot of great things. My name is Tarek Shipov. I'm the technical product marketing manager for Word and PowerPoint. I've been with Microsoft for 5 years. And I will serve as your humble guide on the path to become an office ninja. So what does it mean? There are three paths for enlightenment. The first is to first gain inner peace. Because when you do not have inner peace and you are not focused, you cannot be efficient and effective. And on the path to gaining inner peace, we'll see how we can leverage Outlook and master your inbox, because I'm sure that everybody here is afflicted with a barrage of daily email that is just trying to unnerve you as much as possible. We'll see how OneNote is magical and is way more than notes. You don't have to put everything in order to easily find it. And we'll also see, as part of the inner peace, that you can maintain completely poised and peaceful while you interact with Office on devices that do not have keyboard and a mouse. Because Office is fully touchable, and you can be as efficient and as effective right there. The second path will be clan collaboration. Collaboration, yes, this dreaded messy work that is often imposed on you. We'll see that it can be easy. It's not that difficult. It actually can be pleasant. We'll see how to share calendar to maintain in sync with others, as well as collaborate on documents, even with folks external to your organization, with the tools that you have, assuming, of course, that you're running Office 365 with the latest SharePoint and Exchange to 2013. Yes, very important. I should note that while we'll focus throughout the session mostly on the greatest and latest, I will also highlight some useful tips and tricks and features from previous releases where I think they can be especially helpful. And last but not least, masterful performance. Every time you share a document, your analysis, when you create a presentation, or when you deliver it, you perform. And please raise your hands if you want to demonstrate sucky performance. Yes. No, I don't see many hands. So we'll see how to have masterful performance, how to create documents that make you look good, take data into powerful visual insights, create beautiful presentations, and then present them like a pro. And with that, that kind of summarizes the slide portion of the day, and we'll move on to the live demo. So for the demo, of course, I have a Surface Pro here with me, and fully touch-enabled. You'll be able to track the touch interaction through the circle that appears. But I also have a keyboard and a mouse with me, because Windows 8 and Office work both great with keyboard and a mouse and with touch. And we'll start with Outlook, as I promised, on our path for inner peace to master this unruly inbox. And the first thing to do in the inbox is to admit it. You do not read old emails. You wish you read them. You never get to that. They just wait there and make you feel bad. So instead of, you know, continuing to repress this fact, admit it, go to File, and under your account settings, simply pop open the account, and you'll see here something new, which is the sync slider. And the sync slider determines how far back the emails are cached on your specific PC. By default, these are 12 months, fully configurable, with an IT policy. But you can very easily make it 1 month. And then anything older will not reside in your inbox. The benefit is, of course, boosting the performance of Outlook. But more importantly, you're not overloaded with this huge amount of emails waiting for you in your inbox that, as we said already, you have to admit you're not going to read. It doesn't mean that you don't have access to all of this, because if you run search in your inbox, you have the option to continue to search on the server directly in your inbox and retrieve emails from there. So all the information is there and secure, and you can easily retrieve it. It's just at least out of your visual. So once we take care of that, there is another thing. And I don't know if this kind of thread is something that is familiar. It starts like a legitimate question, and then at a certain point, it gets answered, and then people start saying, yeah, I think you got it. Please stop replying all. And then, oh, but you're replying all. No, please stop replying. Oh, but you're doing it again. And all these ping pong of emails that is, you just wish people stop. So you don't have to rely on them any longer to keep your inbox clean. Pick any in the thread, right-click on it, and hit ignore. And ignore is like a mute button for your inbox. It takes away all the emails in this thread in your inbox right now, as well as any future emails that will come in on this thread. So you know that at least you got rid of this nuisance. You can see, by the way, that as I hover over the header here, I have these quick actions that I can take. So if I see this email with low importance, and I can flag it for follow-up. In this case, it's not really relevant. I simply delete it right here. So a very useful feature to quickly triage through emails, especially when you're back from vacation. To maintain your inner peace, you need to be focused. And to maintain focus, one of the important things is not to be taken out of context. And that's exactly what Outlook helps you here. Because most of us live in the inbox throughout the day, whether in the foreground or the background. Sometimes we need to check something in the calendar. Now, simply by hovering over the calendar, you get a calendar peek, and it shows you. And this is a really interactive view, and you can browse your calendar and open any of the meetings right here. You don't have to be taken to a separate window and out of the context of what you were doing to see really quickly if someone asked you over email, are you free for a meeting? The same goes for the people peek. Not only do you see your favorites here, you can even launch a search right here. So I can easily search and bring the full contact card and expand it. And if I'm connected with Molly on the Outlook social connector, so I can see feeds through LinkedIn, Facebook, SharePoint, all right here in my contacts without switching between too many windows. Now, in this email I'm being asked, did I send the expense report? I'll, of course, reply and say, sure, like a month ago, read your emails. And as you can see, sometimes you get distracted, by the way, on emails. So now, first of all, the important thing to note is I replied in line. It's not that another window popped up for me and I started typing it and I forgot about the other things in the inbox. I'm constantly in the context, replying in line, and getting back on the horse after that. And even if you get distracted and you go to check another email because you saw something in the list that was more important, I don't know if it happened to you, but in the past to me, I visited the inbox a week later and I found next to the draft folder, like this number, 12 emails. That they started, and most of them I just had to hit send to be done with, but I forgot because I got sidetracked. So in this case, you can see that with the improved conversation view, the draft is indicated here very quickly, and if I go back to this thread, the draft is up on top, all I need to do is hit send. By the way, thanks to the mail tips that you can see here popping up, I know that Pavel not only missed my last email a month ago, he's now out on vacation and will probably miss my new email again. So mail tips, very helpful. They help you track not only who's out and what's their auto-reply, but other things. For example, if someone is outside your organization, you will be notified that you're sending it to someone who is not from the inner org. So keep track of those mail tips. They can help you. Of course, now I can hit send and be done with this email. I have here another email asking me for certain information, and as you can see in the body of the email, it asks for customer information. I have it, so let me hit reply. And by the way, you don't have to work with the inline reply view if you don't want. You can easily pop out the email like this and work with it as you're used to. Here's the automatic reply for Pavel, as expected. I'll go to my documents, and I have this customer data right here in an Excel file. I'll drag it in. I'll type, there it is, attached. But as you note, this policy tip popped up, and it says this message may contain sensitive information. Your organization won't allow this message to be sent. What happened here is the data loss prevention policy on Exchange that kicked in. It scans the body of the email, it scans the attachments, and it looks for certain patterns or keywords that were deemed risky by the company. In this case, I can simply hover over the policy tip to see if it pertains to credit card numbers. I can report it. I can learn more. And the important thing is that now, when I hit send, I can't. So this is part of the inner peace, because you know you cannot mess it up. When it's too sensitive and your company defined it as such, Outlook and Exchange will prevent you from doing that mistake. But sometimes it's not about preventing people from doing things, but only educating them. You want, after all, to be educated. You want to educate your employees about what's right and what's wrong. And you want them to make the right decision consciously. So in this case, I'm giving this option, and I can override the policy. It's being audited by the company, but now I can easily send the email after I reviewed the policy and I know what I'm doing. The last thing I'd like to show you right here in your inbox is the is the apps for Office and SharePoint, our new extensibility model for Office and SharePoint. With apps for Office and SharePoint, we use the new Cloud App model, and developers using languages like HTML, JavaScript, and other web languages can create these apps. And the way that you use them specifically on Exchange is you don't need to use them. Once you have them installed once on your account, it resides on the server on Exchange, and they serve themselves to you whenever they're relevant. So if I check this email, you can see that there is nothing particularly special about it, so nothing pops up. But if I go to this email, you see the three apps are waiting here in the app bar, serving themselves to me. So I can check and see that there are action items, and it marks with the action item app, and it marks the relevant information and suggests to mark it as a follow-up. Suggested meetings, identifies let's schedule a meeting, offers me to add it to my calendar. And with Bing Maps, it identified an address, so it highlights the address, and you can see that I have it right here in my contacts, so I don't have to check it out anywhere else like the browser. And this is a real Bing Maps app. It's fully interactive. I can reach with my finger, start panning, swiping. As you can see, it's pretty much to the close to the convention center. This is a real-time aerial view. Well, maybe not real-time, but this is an aerial view of the convention center, and it makes it a lot more powerful when you connect online information with information in the client. And you can do that, of course, in the companies, in your own organizations. The way to get these are, if you choose to go publicly, it's through office.com. There is the store here, and there are apps for Office and SharePoint right here. You can choose by application. Some are for fee, some are for free. But you also have the ability to manage your own app catalog on SharePoint for solutions that you develop internally, as well as those developed by third parties for your special purposes. So that was Outlook. And we'll move on and jump into OneNote. OneNote is a very powerful application. It allows you to capture notes, images, videos, audio, and it does it really in a very intuitive and pleasant way. Not only that, OneNote is available across devices. So it's not just on my PC. It's available on my Windows Phone 8. It's available on iOS, both iPad and iPhone. It's available for Android phones. And it means that I can capture my notes everywhere on any device. And of course, there is the OneNote web app if you need to capture it through the browser. What I want to show you today, though, is to focus on the desktop and show you some of the truly magical stuff that happens there. So if I go here to my notes, and I can, for example, insert a printout of a file. So I'll insert a file printout. I'll choose a presentation, one, by the way, that I used earlier to demo in the garage episode in the office booth. You're more than welcome to join us there for the live sessions. And what happens right now is that the presentation is converted to a printout. So all the slides are essentially printed as images and are all brought into OneNote right here. And the benefit of bringing all of them into OneNote is on several layers. First, you can see that I can use some of the OneNote capabilities. For example, simply right-click an image and say, copy text from the page. And then I can go ahead and paste it, and you can see that though this is an image, like a JPEG, it OCR'd the text, and it allows you to copy it and paste it. And you can do that to images of receipts or spec sheets or anything that you take an image to as well. The OCR would work in a great way. So now I can say, let's change and enter here a different, for example, wording. But not only that, because I'm using a device that has a stylus, I can very easily just bring the stylus close here and start annotating and say, make more popping. For example, horrible handwriting, but that's okay. Let me show you other things and how you can easily convert this horrible handwriting also into text. So I want to enter here as part of my project a good website example. I have it here open in IE. I'll go ahead and insert a screen clipping. And immediately, OneNote recedes and offers me the screen clipping tool. I can simply select with the mouse and select the area that I want. And it's inserted into my page right here. And now I can very easily, just like I showed you right now, decide to say, use this section. And if I don't like my handwriting, I go to the drawing tab and say ink to text. And you can say that, oh, it captured the use in this section for some reason separately because I wrote them too far apart. But you can see that it simply, and it's very hard to see, so let me just expand it. You can see that it simply took the ink that I inked freely on the note and converted it into text. And by the way, I apologize, I forgot to mention at the beginning of the session. If you have fun, fast, and friendly questions, feel free to shoot them as we go throughout the session. I'm more than happy to take them. If I see that the answers may take me longer, I'll ask you to ask them again at the Q&A section at the end. So though, please feel free if you have anything. So once we have that, another powerful thing that OneNote offers is tagging. You can see here, under the home, that I have the ability to apply a variety of tags to my notes, ink, and sections. So for example, I can mark this section as important. And if I want, I can see a view, look for tags, or even create a summary page of all the tags throughout my notebook. And this is like an executive summary for you of everything that's happening in your notebook because you tagged it. So here are the questions that you need answered. Here are the important things that you need to remember. Here are the key contact people. Because of the wide variety of tags, it makes this summary capability very useful and handy. And of course, I promised you that it's very easy to find things in OneNote. Whether you keep it orderly in nice notebooks, sections, and notes, or whether you just drop everything into note after note after note without having any kind of order, it's very easy to find things in OneNote. All you need to do is go to the search, type sales, and you can see the different search results popping up. And as I go through search results, you can see that it searches not only text, but also ink, also within images. The search is so powerful, it will even look in audio clips. It will scan the audio clip, convert it to text for the purposes of search, and will find the right keywords there. Even if you inserted a video, if you recorded a video into OneNote, and it will search the audio track of the video for this particular word. Very capable, very powerful capability that saves you a lot of time, because you don't need to make everything organized. You just dump it in OneNote, and you know that you will find it there no matter what in seconds. The last thing I want to show you in that OneNote is, let me close the search, the ability to insert files with updating previews. So in this case, I'll insert an existing Excel spreadsheet. And you can see that I can choose from attaching it to inserting the full spreadsheet or just a chart or table, which is what I actually need for the purposes of my notes. And OneNote identifies the different objects within the Excel spreadsheet. So I can select a particular chart, and I can bring it in. And when I bring in this chart, it gives me a live preview of it. So I can very easily edit this information. And when I click at it, you will see that Excel opens up. So I'll go ahead. Let's say that I know that this number is not accurate. I'll simply change it to 5,000. And I'll hit Save. And the moment I hit save, you'll see that it takes a couple of seconds, and this number here also updates, including, of course, the chart. Huh. That's not good for demos. Well, I rushed it too much. Never mind. Trust me. It's supposed to, well, I'll leave it be for one more second. Maybe it wakes up. Well, I know that this was the OneNote section, and the concept of OneNote is way more than notes. Doesn't show up. Trust me, it worked at least 6 times when I prepped for this session, so you'll have to take my word. And hey, don't take my word. Try it out yourself. Really works. So, excuse me? Enable content. You know what? I didn't notice that. Maybe that might have a good catch. Maybe I should have enabled the content for it. Oh, and it did change. Yes! OneNote scores. So that was OneNote. And the last thing I want to show you in this section of Inner Peace is that you can trust Office even on touch devices. So let me show you some of the specific touch investments that we have throughout the applications. So in Outlook, which we visited previously, what I want to highlight specifically in Outlook is that you go in any of the client applications, you can very easily go into touch mode. And when you go to touch mode, let me expand the ribbon and show you exactly what happens. So notice the ribbon as it is now. And notice what happens when I go into touch mode. And you can see that the icons become bigger and more spacious to accommodate finger interaction on smaller form factors such as tablets. Now, what I also, and specifically for OneNote, for Outlook, you also see that the quick actions are now docked to the right under my right thumb. So I can very easily browse through the emails, scroll through them with my left thumb, find an email that I want to delete, and simply delete it with my right. So very accommodating of the familiar handling of thumb navigation using touch. But you don't have to even know about touch mode to take advantage of it. So let me go to mouse mode and return the ribbon to as it was collapsed. Look what happens when I click on home with the mouse. Now look what happens when I tap on home with my finger. Office understands how you want to interact with it. And if you use a mouse, it uses mouse mode. If you use a touch, it uses touch mode. And the same would apply for right-click menus. Whether you right-click with a mouse or long tap with your finger, the right type of menu with the right space between the buttons will open up for you. Let's move forward and show you a little bit of the touch in Word. So I'm sure that you've seen already the new start screen for the applications. I'm signed in. It knows the recent documents that I worked on. So I'll launch one of them. And it even remembers the last point that I was in the document. So in this case, you see the resume reading callout popping up and allows me to go back. But what I want to show you here is that this is a standard document in paginated form optimized for print. But I have here a button which is right here on the bottom right, or you can simply go to view and trigger it from here and go to read mode. And because we know that the majority of the time when you use Word, you read documents rather than edit them, we figured we need to give you a great reading experience that is also optimized for touch and tablet consumption. So you can see that I can easily scroll with my fingers and it sticks perfectly to it. I can pinch to zoom, change the size of the text. You can see that the number of columns readjust to ensure that they have an optimized reading experience. If something looks too small, all you need to do is double tap it and then bring it in full view with object zoom. Once I'm done seeing that, I can tap anywhere else and be back in the text. And let's say that you're, God forbid, on a red-eye flight. Everything is dark around you. Everybody's snoring. But you're hard at work, diligent, prepping for a meeting early in the morning. You don't want to cause yourself eye strain, and you certainly don't want to impose on the environment around you. That's why you go to View, Page Color, you inverse it, and as you can see, you can still consume all the content. It's all there, and it's exactly the same document. You did not change the content. This document looks great, still in print layout. I can easily go back to it and print it, and nothing changed from the perspective of the content. So a great consumption experience and very touch-friendly. Next thing I'd like to show you is in PowerPoint. So with PowerPoint, I'll go straight into a slideshow to show you, And you can see that I can simply swipe in between the different slides. If I have a particularly busy slide, what I can leverage for touch interaction is the trigger animations. So let me make all these go away. And instead of having all this information overload you, use trigger animations just to bring up the relevant pieces. And I can just as easily make them go away if I want to change my focus. So it makes it very even more friendly for touch and very common. You can still use it, of course, with mouse, because Office works great with touch and mouse. But it's great on touch, and you can see that I can even use it to navigate to other slides or use the map icon here because I applied the navigation to go back to the previous slide. I can even use the pinch movement to go to the slide navigator that allows me to see all the slides in my deck as thumbnails. I can jump in between the sections and jump to any particular information that I want. And of course, thanks to the touch, I can also zoom in with the expansion movement with the fingers and focus on any particular area of the slide. And the last thing that I'd like to show you when it comes to Office and Touch is OneNote for Windows 8. So you saw just now OneNote for the desktop. And with OneNote for Windows 8, which you can find on the App Store for free, you should download it right now on your new Surface, which you probably just purchased. You should definitely download it. Very powerful application. Just like the rest of the OneNote clients, syncs back to your main notebooks on SharePoint or SkyDrive. And what I want to show you here is, yes, I have here all my notes and sections and notebooks. But really reimagine that for touch interaction. And the way we do that is you see that there is no ribbon. Rather than having the ribbon, when I select the texture to manipulate it, you can see that the radial menu trigger is here with A to indicate that now it's in textual mode. And when I click on it, the radial menu pops up. I can very easily swipe to the font signs and change it with my finger with a speedometer-like experience. I can change the color very easily and even apply bold settings. And again, here too, when you have a pen, finger and pen, you can interact with both in a very intuitive way because I can use my finger to pen and scroll, and the moment I bring the pen in, I can use it to annotate. And I don't need to switch mode when I use these. It's just like using pen and paper. I use my hands to move the paper, but I use the pen to write, and it's the same thing with your device the moment that you have a stylus. So with that, let's summarize what we've seen so far. So we've seen these 28 steps for to regain inner peace. I'm not going to count all of them. They're, of course, available in the deck for you later on. Any particular questions about any of these? Yes, please. So right now, OneNote for Windows 8 does not support audio or video recording. It's a relatively new app, but still a work in progress, of course. What you can certainly do is it's integrated with your device and with the camera if you have it in the device. So if I'm here in my note, that is coming up any second now. There it is. You can see that I have here the integration with the camera, and I can choose the front camera or back-facing camera, take the image. Sorry? Oh. Brilliant me. So let me go back. Yes, brilliant me. So here we are in OneNote for Windows 8. And as here we are in OneNote for Windows 8, and I can very easily bring up the radial menu and activate the camera. It integrates with the camera app on the device, and I can very easily take your picture and use the camera app to crop it and take only the relevant piece that I want, click OK, and it's right there in my note. So while audio and video are not there, the image capture at least is there already. You can use whiteboards, spec sheets, business cards, etc. Your kids' doodles, whatever floats your boat. Yes, please. So what about conversations in Microsoft? Ah, conversations in Link within OneNote, you're asking? So the way that right now Windows 8 is set up is that you can split your screen and you can have the Link app open, and we have the Link application for Windows 8 too. You can have the Link app side by side with the OneNote application sharing the screen. So that is the way to achieve it at the moment. Thank you for the questions. So with that, let's jump to the next section, which is clan collaboration. Yes, collaboration can be messy. Many people dread it. Sometimes, or too often, it feels that there are very high chances of getting hit by a friendly shuriken fire, and you sometimes prefer to huddle in your office. But there is no real reason to do that, because collaboration can be very easy. So let's see first how easy it is to sync with others. Syncing with others is a major pain point, and we hear it constantly from our customers and you guys, of course. And when I go into my calendar, you see that I have here the option right here under the Home tab to share my calendar. And when I... Okay. That's an unpleasant surprise. Oh, trying to connect. Sorry. For some reason, oh, I booted it up. Yeah, there it is. It's connected. And I can share my calendar. And as you can see, I can send the calendar to anyone in my contacts, in my company, and also outside my company. So if you're trying to sync with a partner or the vendor, that is another great way to do that. Once you have their email in, you can choose the level of permissions you're giving, whether you want them to see only your availability, busy or free, whether you want them to see also the subject or even the full details. And that's all that they can see if they, if that's what you send them, the availability only, that's the only thing that they'll see. And so once you send it to them, you see it's sent. Sending. And here I have a calendar that was shared with me in the list of calendars, so I can toggle it and you can see it side by side. And you can even click to merge them and see them in one view, which makes it very easy now to sync and see, for example, an entire team when everybody's available, when are the overlaps, etc. You can, of course, at any point in time, split it back or even remove it, so you're not messing up your own calendar, so you can remain calm about that aspect. Another important aspect of collaboration is, of course, documents. So let me bring up back Word and open this document that I've been working on. And a great way to collaborate is, of course, to track changes, especially when you have several authors of the same document. But when you track changes over time and these deletions and insertions pile up, it can be very messy. That's why we changed the default view to simple markup. In simple markup, you see the final form of the text in the body of the text. But change-ins indicate where changes were made. All you need to do is click any of the change-ins, and it toggles to all markup. You click again, any of the change-ins, and it toggles back to simple markup. So it's a great, focused, simple reading experience that allows you to focus on the actual content and what's delivered, while allowing you to peek into the various changes that were made. Now, in case you're not as trusty as me, let's say, with your team members, and you're concerned that they will remove the tracking, we now make it even easier to simply lock the tracking by applying a password. So now no one can stop tracking unless they have your password, and you can be certain that everything is really captured in the document. You also see here the comments, and I can easily now reply a comment in a threaded way and say, sure, I'll add it. And I have here the typo. I'm sorry, I can't stand typos. So threaded comments make it very easy and powerful to have conversations right where they matter most, in the context of the text that you're discussing. And as these conversations get long and people reply to one another and you've got this long thread and it becomes too bloated, but you already address the issue, you want it out of the way, what you can easily do is right-click and mark comment as done. And when you do that, you see that it's collapsed to one line that is grayed out. So you and others working with you have a visual indicator, this has been addressed. But you're not giving up this rich context. It's all still there. You can just as easily bring it back and see what everything was about. But so far, we saw how to collaborate within a document. When you collaborate externally with others, how do you do that? How do you bring the document to them? How do you share documents so everybody can work on one version of the truth rather than multiple versions that you need to aggregate together later on? So when you're signed into Office, if you're signed in with Office 365 credentials, the default save location is SharePoint. If you're signed in with a Microsoft account, which is formerly known as a Live ID, the default save location is SkyDrive. And when you save to one of these locations, SharePoint or SkyDrive, you can then share with people by inviting them right here from the backstage. So this document is actually on SharePoint, but I can type here an invitation to Alex, resolve it against my contact or Active Directory, assign the right level of permission right here, whether Alex can edit or view only the document. In this case, I want to give Alex the editing permissions. I can type a note and hit share. And now the document is shared by SharePoint with Alex. And if the IT administration chooses to enable it, you can even share with external folks to the organization. And when you share with someone like that external, they don't get permissions to anything else in the folder, only to this file. So you know you're safe and they have a very specific and restricted access. Now that I shared it with Alex, let's go ahead and visit his inbox. So I'll go into his Outlook web application. AlexD on Microsoft.com. And this is, of course, an Office 365 account. So very easy to access it through the browser. And we'll see that Alex received here an invite from me. This is for the calendar. This is for the document. And you can see that we can open it right here. And we'll place the documents side by side. So this is the browser on the right, Alex. This is me and my client on the left. You can see that Alex can choose to edit in the Word web app. So even if this partner or vendor or external person that I'm collaborating with, even if they do not have Office at all, they can still use the Office web applications off my server, of my SharePoint, to edit with me at the same time. You can see that Alex got a notification that I'm editing the document. I get this notification that Alex is in the document at the same time. And now we can edit it together. So if I go here where Alex is at in his document, I can very easily click Insert, Picture. I'll add here this image. I'll hit Save. We'll save here too. And you'll see, the save here didn't update the server yet. So then, specifically for Word, the model for refreshing changes is save, because every time you save, your version syncs with the server. So once both of us save the document, you can see that the image pops right there. Yes, it did. I hate it when I get the timing wrong. So there it is, both of us working, client and web app. And the same would apply for OneNote or PowerPoint. Excel is the only exception where only the Excel web app offers you real-time co-authoring. Yes, please. Would that work on SharePoint on-prem? Yes, as long as you enabled external access to your SharePoint on-prem. So it's easier to enable with SharePoint Online, but with SharePoint on-prem, if you provision an extranet or an external website and you post a file from to there, then your external party will be able to reach it, because at the end of the day, you have to have your external collaborator have the permissions or the access to the file location. Otherwise, they can't get it. And the last thing I want to show you about collaboration is, let's say that you're on a conference call or a bridge and you want to walk someone through a document. You can send it over to them over email and tell them, now look on page 7, look on page 9, or you can then go ahead and switch to a link or something else. But let's say that you want the simplest, most straightforward solution. That would be to go to File, and under File here, under Share, you have the option to present online. And when you present online with the Office Presentation Service, which is free, a copy of this document is being generated on the server, and I'm being given a link to the online presentation. So here's the link. I will copy it. In this case, I'll simply paste it in the server, but you can imagine sharing it over email with someone or IM or something like that. When I start the presentation, you can see that as I scroll in my client on the left, the document in the browser on the right scrolls as well. So I can walk someone through my document, even if they're not in the room with me, when they're using only the browser. They can even stop tracking me, and they can start scrolling back and forth. They're being notified you're no longer tracking the presenter, but they can at any point in time say, follow presenter and sync back with me. The same capability, by the way, is available for PowerPoint as well with Present Online, where you can use the Office Presentation Service to simply project to someone else's browser. So that was the part about client collaboration, and we saw overall roughly 9 steps to achieve it. Any questions on what we saw so far? The Present Online is available in Excel through Link. So only if you have Link, you can use Present Online. What happens there is that Excel is then looking at any of open Link conversations and offers you to generate a new one, a new Link meeting, and then it will populate the file immediately in Link as shared content. You can do the same, by the way, through Link with Word and PowerPoint. It's just Word and PowerPoint also offer the Office Presentation Service and doing it directly to someone's browser. And I should also know that when you choose to end a presentation, an online presentation, the file is no longer there. So you know that people can check it out only while you're actively presenting it. When you stop presenting it, you know that you're safe. It's gone. So I want to continue to our last section, our last path of enlightenment, masterful performance. As I mentioned, we all want to look good. We all want to ensure that our performance is perceived well. So to do that, we can do several things. And the first one that I'll start from is creating beautiful documents. So to create beautiful documents, we'll start with a Word. And here we are. I'll start with a blank page right here. But in this case, let's say that my boss sent me actually something to start from on my document because he doesn't want me to waste time. And he sent me this right here, this PDF. So I opened this PDF and I was told, use this as the skeleton. Remind me later, thank you. So I'll copy the content from my Adobe Reader and I'll just paste it in Word. And I don't know if many of you experienced it before, I assume that you did, but that's typically what happens to content that you copy from Adobe Reader into Word. All the formatting and structure is lost. So yes, what I can do now is try to reformat everything to make it look good. Or rather than do that, let me undo this paste and simply go to File, Open, and I'll open in my documents the PDF as if I'm opening any other Word document. And the moment I click to open it, Word creates a copy and converts it. It opens in read mode because it's in read only, but I can easily go out of that. And you can see that now this is the PDF on the right. This is the Word document on the left. This is PDF Reflow. It essentially converts PDF content into native Word content as if the content was created in Word to begin with. Paragraphs are real paragraphs. Bulleted lists are real bulleted lists. If I hit enter here, another bullet is added. It's not just a character there that I need to reformat later. If I have here a table, for example, and I want to add another column, all I need to do is use one of the new contextual controls to add this column as easily, and I'm done. So a feature that can save you a lot of time when making content from PDF look good and even just usable. Now, I want, of course, to make this one look better, so I'll use a title and I'll use a couple of headings. And the reason that I apply these is that we have here the design tab, which is new to Word. And what we did with the design tab is when we aggregated all the document level design decisions in one tab. Question, please.
Yes. Does Word 13 still save as PDF as well?
Yes. You can save as PDF, and you can open in PDF, and then you can save as, and you can save as at the same name and replace the PDF. I will just add this one caveat, and thank you for bringing this question up. This feature is not meant to edit PDFs, because to rehydrate the content and make it usable in Word, we reflow it, which means that if you're trying to fill a form, we may take a line in a form and make it flow over two lines now, so the cell will be extended. So it's fully usable in Word, but it's no longer it doesn't fully mimic the original structure layout of the PDF. So if that is your goal, that is not the feature. Or alternatively, you can just be willing to accept that and assume the reformatting costs that you can incur, you may incur in order to bring it to look exactly like the identical PDF that you had before. Thank you for asking that. So in the design tab, I can apply different themes. And the benefit of applying a theme is that now the colors and behavior are consistent also with Excel and PowerPoint files if I apply the themes there. And when I copy content in between them, it will always maintain the formatting. And of course, I can browse over the different styles, and you can see with the live preview the look that it gives my document. So very easy to apply different looks just by selecting one of these options. What you can also add here is now online pictures, because we know that people save more and more content online. Rather than make you go download it or copy it from the browser and then paste it, etc., you can search directly here from SharePoint, from office.com clipart, Bing image search, or even tie in your own services. So here I already entered my SkyDrive credentials, which are tied to my Office account. But you can certainly add your Facebook or Flickr credentials. And I can browse now my images directly on SkyDrive. So as I go here into this collection, you can see that they're all here. I simply check the one that I want, insert it to the document, and it's right there. And when the image is right there, I can certainly do the things that you're used to already, like cropping. The one thing that I do want to highlight is the new layout menu that is now contextual. So you can see here that if I click this menu, it gives me the layout options for this object. And it's not just for pictures, it's for other graphic objects as well. I can choose it to be in line with text or tight. When you choose one of the text wrappings, we now make it easier to say and even predict, will it move with the text or will it be in fixed position on the page? So no need to guess any longer. You just need to choose what you want it to be. And once it's here, another thing that helps a lot is the live layout. Because when I drag the image now through my text, you can see that it reflows in real time and takes the guesswork out of laying out objects on the page. I can just as easily add not only pictures, but even online videos. And when I insert an online video, I can search for one. Whoop, that was a typo right there. You can see that what's inserted to my document is not the actual video, but a thumbnail, because we don't want to bloat the document. The video thumbnails is editable just like any other image like we just saw. You can even apply any of the styles or effects if you want. And the nice thing about it is that when you hit play, it plays it right here within Word, you're not taken to the browser. It's an overlay in Word itself. You can very easily navigate to the various sections. And when you're done viewing that, just tap anywhere else, and you're back in the document. So hopefully that will liven up some documents out there and allow you to make them richer and a richer reading experience also for your audience. Next up, let's visit Excel and see how you can take your data and extract powerful visual insights out of it. So here I am in Excel with this file. Yes, please. Sure. The question is, what happens if I created a document with all these effects and even with an online video in it, and I send it to someone with 2010 on a previous version? In this case, what happens is we convert the video thumbnails into a static picture that is a link that will open the browser. So the content, the link, and the essence is there. It's just that the video playing capabilities are not there in previous versions, and we take that into account. So here I am in Excel, and I don't know how many of you, and I'm sure that quite a bit, encountered this scenario where you have very useful information from a backend system that's provided to you. But this backend system is not the most intelligent one, and we export it to CSV or Excel format. It meshes several fields in one cell. Now, if you're already an Office Ninja, you can, of course, write a complicated macro in VBA. But even this takes time. Sometimes, and of course for most mere mortals, what we tend to do is rekey everything character by character. So that's exactly what I'll do. I want the category here, so I'll extract the events from the first column here. Events, and then I have advertising. Look at that. Example and a half is all it took Excel to identify the pattern and fill it up for me. All I need to do is hit enter, and I'm done. And even two-word strings are easily picked up in this pattern. This is called flash fill, and it's powerful enough not only to extract information, but even combine it. So let's say that I want the full name, which is the first name from here and the last name from here. So I'll go and type Ryan Place here, and then start to type Deanne, and that's all it took for Excel to do the work for me. So I can focus on what's important rather than on cleaning data. But as I promised, Excel is not about cleaning data. Excel is about the visual insights. So let me select this data and visit the Quick Analysis menu. The Quick Analysis, now contextual, whenever you select a bunch of data, and it aggregates the visualization tools from across of Excel. And you don't need to commit to anything. You just need to hover over the options and see, does this make sense for my data? Did I learn something from this? That's exactly what I'm doing here with the conditional formatting. As I hover over the options, you can see that it targeted the numbers and applies the conditional formatting on them. I can go to charts and see some recommended charts. So Excel looks at the data, figures out what is the best chart type for this kind of data, and offers me various options. I can even have totals at the bottom of the data and recommended pivot tables. Pivot tables, very powerful analysis tool, takes time to master. In this case, I can pick one that just looks right and create with one click a pivot table without knowing what a pivot table is. Now, if I choose to include also timestamp data here, let me go ahead and create one of the charts. And let me make it bigger so we can all see it better and also increase slightly the text size. One of the things I want to show you is that we have new chart controls that allows you to very easily change the charts right here in a contextual manner. So you can see that I can very easily just hover above the options and see already what they mean on my data and how it looks. The same goes for chart styles. So I can pick a different style if I like one. I can even apply a variety of different colors if I think that something different color will make it pop even more. But what I want to show you here is actually a new capability that we added in 2013. Like in 2010, we added the slicers for pivot tables and pivot charts. We now added also the timeline slicer. And when you have a timestamp, it becomes very handy because it allows you, sorry, let me drag the right thing here. It allows you to very easily select the right time period that you want reflected in your table in a very visual manner. So you want to extend it, you simply extend it and you include more of the period. So again, very powerful tool to figure out exactly what happened, when, what do you want to include in your analysis, what you want to leave out. So the last thing I'll show in Excel, I won't show how to create, but I'll definitely want to ensure that you're aware of that, and we have plenty of material to walk you through the creation, and that is PowerView.
Sorry.
Yes, please. Sorry, how the timeline slicer is presented back to? That is a good question. I apologize. I do not know the answer off the top of my head. I'll have to check it on a virtual machine somewhere with 2010. If you want to join me after the session, I'm happy to try to locate one for you and try to check it right on the spot. Thank you. So this is PowerView. PowerView, a powerful interactive BI dashboard that allows you to simply see what data means and the relationships between data. The way to create PowerView in a nutshell is it relies on PowerPivot. In the backend, we have simply a series of spreadsheets. If I go to the manage space, you can see them. And these spreadsheets can be in Excel, on SQL Server, on a bunch of online resources. And once you have this data that you need in place, you can go into the diagram view in a very intuitive manner that may remind you of Access. Simply drag one field from one table to another to indicate these are linked. And once you create these links, you can have PowerView by dragging the different fields and visualizations onto the canvas. And part of the beauty of it is that the visuals themselves serve as filter for other visuals. So if I click here on this category of cameras and camcorders, you can see that it filtered the rest of the visuals. And I can pop open any of them. And in this case, I even have the ability to play it a long time and get really powerful visuals and insights to share. And the share is a key word here because the goal is not just to gain insights for yourself. You typically gain insights and you want to share it with others. And it's very easy to do with PowerView because while you do need the Excel client at 2013 and the Pro Plus version of that to create PowerView, once the PowerView is ready, you can put the file on SharePoint. You can post it to a site and have anyone who is visiting the site facing this interactive dashboard the moment they visit it, playing around with all the triggers, the visuals, the filters there, so everybody can understand what the data means for themselves. Sorry, the question is? The question is, am I publishing it back as a pivot table or as an Excel document? You can post the Excel document itself to SharePoint, and it's fully... people can fully experience it using the Excel web app. The Excel web app is the one that enables the experience on SharePoint. So the last thing that I want to visit here is PowerPoint. Yes, please. Is it possible to automate adding? That's another thing I'll have to follow up on. If you don't mind getting me after the session, I'll ensure that you'll get the answer for that. So here we are in PowerPoint. And with PowerPoint, what I want to highlight is that while all the applications of the start screen offer the templates, PowerPoint offers themes. And when you check specific PowerPoint themes, you don't see only the theme, but also theme variants. So you can very easily, in one click, apply different looks to the presentation. You also don't need to guess what data might look like in this presentation, because you can flip through different layouts and see what they feel like. So let's say that I'm happy with this one. I'll go ahead and hit create. I'll create here a new slide. to show you some of the work that we did around the alignment guides. So in 2010, we introduced the alignment guides that allow you to align the edges of shapes to ensure that it's easy to align shapes and make it look professional. And right now, in 2013, we have the alignment guides, the smart guides, even smarter, because you don't only align the edges, but also the distance. So when you get to an equidistant place, the alignment guides pop into place, and they offer slight stickiness in making the objects snap to them, so it makes it even easier to align it and put it in the right place. So it's very easy to create a series of shapes and for diagrams and flows, etc. Another very powerful feature that I personally love is merge shapes. So let's say that you have two or more shapes, and let me apply a different fill just to indicate that it's clearly a different one. If you go under Format to merge shapes, you can apply five functions: Union, Combine, Fragment, Intersect, and Subtract. And by hovering any of these, you can see already the result. And if I go to Fragment, you can see that indeed, now I have three shapes created from this fragmentation. And each of these is a real one shape. This is not grouping or anything. If I go to edit the points, you can see that I'm editing the points of one shape. No tricks. Let me show you, I personally use this feature a lot. I really love it, but I'm a nutcase with this one, seriously. So I create icons as I go along for my presentations, and you can see all these icons I created in PowerPoint using merge shapes and edit points. So you can get really creative and get icons to serve as visual symbols in your presentations, particularly in diagrams, rather than overload them with text. I have here an example of a professional presentation and how you might use it there. So by the way, PowerPoint, just like Word, offers, because I'm signed into Office, the resume reading call out, so I can jump back easily to where I was. And you can see here that I want to create this TV icon, so I'll go ahead and subtract this border. And then I'm subtracting this base. And this is something that I learned creating icons, that it's very helpful to create these grooves because it helps with the contour and making the icon even more identifiable. Now I simply union that. And the benefit of giving it as a shape in Office is that now I apply, for example, shape styles. So in one click, I created an awesome looking icon, and I can bring it, and thanks to the alignment guides, bring it back to my diagram and make it belong pretty easily. So now I have a nice infographic there in place. Another useful feature is to call out particular things, but also ensure that you have harmony of color, is the eyedropper, which is new. Eyedropper works with text, shape fill, and shape line. And you can see that if I want to highlight the word commitment, all I need to do is go, for example, to the text color, choose the eyedropper. You see that as I go around, it shows me with the preview the color that I'm sampling, but it also, if I hover enough, gives me the RGB values and the actual name of the color. And when I click on it, it samples it, and now the word commitment is first, it stands out, which is great, but second, it stands out and it's exactly the same color as the kite, which gives my slide a better balance. It leveraged the fact that the kite is the red element popping in the image and the commitment is the red element popping in the text. So you can get real creative around such notions. And if you wonder, by the way, why you need this assistance to know what the name of the color, women, no, you don't, because you know all the colors and you get it right. But we men, we mess it up. And if you don't believe me, apparently there is actual real research about this point, which I love. And you can see right here that there is a certain way that men see color and a certain way that women see color. And for us, there are these big buckets of color. And you know, that. So I love this feature because it helps me with my wife. So we've seen some of these. I'll also briefly mention that we have here the Format Object Task Pane that is contextual. So if you choose text, you will have some of the text options, and if you choose an image, you'll have some of the image effects and shapes. Very useful because it's in the side. You can always have it docked and manipulate a lot of things on the slides. Yes, please. Yes. So you should totally join me in the garage demo tomorrow at the Opus booth at 11:30 because I demo it right there and on the PPI, which is the 82 inch screen. If we have time at the end of the session, I'm more than happy to demo it here too. It has actually a very cool applicability. You can even merge text and pictures. So you know what? Let me quickly do it right here because why not? So here's the text, and let me select a font that you'll more easily see, and we'll make it big. So now I'll choose the background and image and the text, and I'll go to Format and Intersect, and you can see that that's exactly what it did. It intersected the image with the text. So the last thing I wanted to ensure that you remember on the front of creating beautiful presentations is the ability to add video, which we introduced in 2010. And when you insert a video, and video from your own PC, not video from the web, you can insert video from the web, you don't have as rich editing capabilities then. When you insert a video from your PC, you can apply a lot of effects on it, just like you can on pictures. So, for example, I can go to soft edges and blend this video with the background, for example. Now, let's say that I start playing it and I figure out, no, this video is too long, I'm not happy about it. You can very easily go to playback, click trim video, and then choose to make it start here where the action starts, and then I'll put it here when the action ends. And now we can get down to business. And if I play this, you can see that now it starts right from here. So video, very powerful tool in PowerPoint, a lot of rich opportunities there. The last thing is about presenting like a pro. And to present like a pro, we have redesigned presenter view, which, and this is a very important difference, is checked off by default. So when you go to present for the first time, you're using PowerPoint for the first time, presenter view will be checked off by default, which means that if I'm connected to an external screen and I just hit play these slides from the beginning, what happens now is that PowerPoint contacts Windows and it tells Windows, change the projection settings to extend, even if I was on duplicate or no projection at all. Which means that on the main screen, you see now the slide that I'm projecting, but on my screen, I see now presenter view. And let me switch these displays and show you exactly what I see. This is the view that I have on my screen. And the way to switch these is right here. Wow, that's going to be tricky to look there on. Wait, I have your site. Where's my mouse? Oh. Was on the wrong screen, display settings. So you can see that I can easily swap presenter view and slideshow. In the unlikely event that we didn't get right what is the main screen and what is the secondary screen, you can easily swap them right here with a click. Now, let me enforce the duplication so I can show you exactly what I see on my screen as I interact with presenter view. So right now, I'm in duplicate. And presenter view has here, of course, the current slide, the upcoming slide, and the notes. And you can customize this view to your liking. So let's say that you want to have the next slide bigger, or you want to dedicate more area for the notes, or make the notes bigger. All doable, very easy. You can use the mouse, you can use the finger for all of these, whether it's the adjustments or simply flicking through the slides. You can see that I have the ability, just like I showed previously with the touch, to pinch and go into the slide navigator. And when I'm in Slide Navigator in Presenter View, my audience sees only the last slide that I fully projected. Only I see the Slide Navigator. So when I tap on a slide to go next, to the next section, then they see this as the next slide. So this is a very powerful feature because no matter how nonlinear a presentation ends up being, and even if your audience randomizes you with questions, it seems like at any point in time, the next slide has the answer. Like you are ready for them. You're a mind reader, which is awesome. You don't need to click 10 times, oh, no, let me get to the slide. You just jump straight to there and they don't even see that. And you can, of course, zoom in on any particular area and focus the attention of the audience on that too. Even in presenter view, the pen and the ink work great, so I can very easily decide to choose here the pen and decide to change someone the values here and indicate that, and you can see it all reflected. And when you terminate the presentation, you have the option to keep the you can keep the inner annotation, and if you say keep, what happens is these are kept on the slide as a regular shape, so you can distribute the presentation later on with everything that you captured during the presentation. So that was masterful performance and the 27 steps that we followed to reach to it. Overall, we cover today all these. I know it has been quite a bit, but I hope you found it useful. We do have for you related content, and we have other sessions that expand on some of the topics. I actually did not get to demo Site Mailbox, which is a very powerful feature in Outlook that combines or brings together Outlook, SharePoint, and Exchange, so you can access document libraries directly from within your inbox. Very powerful feature. You have a whole session dedicated to that, sessions on data loss prevention, collaborating with the web apps, etc. We, of course, have the Garage Live sessions going on every 30 minutes at the office booth, so please join us there. I should note that every day we raffle 4 Surface Pros for attendees of these sessions. Oh, every session? Sorry, I'm being corrected. Every session. So just by popping in for 15 minutes of a live show, you increase your chances of getting a Surface Pro for free. And I will be available today later at the Ask the Experts session between 6:30 and 8:30. So if you have any additional questions, I'll stick around for a couple of minutes. If you have more questions, I know that most of you are running out to the next session. Thank you very much.